Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is finally done traveling to Philadelphia, but he couldn't be bothered to see the show. How dare you, Fred? How are you?
I got there like an hour after the show had started and decided it wasn't worth the fight. So
Fair enough.
I'm glad I made that decision, considering it, how late it ended. My God, the show, too long. Too long, I think, is a fair way to put this.
Yeah, they've made a habit of having their pay-per-views now go 4.5 hours, which I think if the content is good and it's consistent, I have no problem with it. But when you're on the East Coast and so much of those cities rely on public transportation, it can be a little bit of a hassle. I know, like, just here, we have almost no public transportation unless you're actually in the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul. But they have a light rail. And we would take light rail to the Twins games every once in a while because it was so much easier than trying to find parking. But during like the home openers, they like during the week, they stopped running the light rail like 7 or 8 o'clock. So you might miss the last light rail train. They've since fixed that, but just absolutely annoying to have to leave like the home opener early. But then I think we may see East Coast pay-per-views kind of slow down for that purpose. We'll find out. But Fred, overall level, what did you think of the show?
It was good-ish, I think, is where I come down on it. I don't think it was a disaster by any stretch. I think I did not watch the pre-show, so I only got like the 4 hours and 20 minutes of the main show. There were some good matches on it. I don't know. Yeah, there was a match of the year contender on it. There were a couple that were like very nice matches, and a couple that were disappointing but not bad, just like decentish. Definitely nothing like that four-way match with Moxley and Orange Cassidy at the end of last year that like nearly broke me on the whole Death Riders thing. Right now, I'm like, yeah, the Death Riders are trending okay.
They're fine.
It seems like they're doing good business, which is now I get it with the Copeland build because that was pretty good storytelling in the last few weeks heading into the show. And I think that I don't think the Swerve build was bad, but it was short. But Swerve is super over. And I don't know. The Moxley's work is not great right now for the most part. It's kind of House of Torture North America edition right now. And that's not terribly working for me, but it's also not that bad, I guess, is where I'm coming. Like, it's not great by any stretch. It's not bad either. So this is kind of in that, like, in between of, like, well, it's fine, I guess.
It's weird. You know? Weird, I think, yeah, is a really good way to frame this.
What did you think of the show?
I thought this would have been a phenomenal pay-per-view if it was like Vengeance or Bad Blood. This was just a B-level type of show, and I think it over-delivered for what the card was, but I don't think it was a great AEW show. Last I checked on Cage Match, it was like a 6.7. Yeah. I think that's a fair rating, especially when you look at it in terms of what AEW is and has been from a pay-per-view cycle standpoint. Like, look, they only had a couple matches that were super well-built, a lot of stuff that was like, hey, Owen Hart tournament. Or
yeah,
like a couple, like 2 or 3 week builds, which they're fine. I really liked it. I enjoyed myself. We're going to talk about the finish of the show, which I'm going to remain optimistic that they won't screw it up, because on the surface at the moment, it's like, what are we doing here? But it's less about the actual moment itself, and it's more about the follow up and how you utilize what you did. That to me is more important, and that is still a big question mark. And after watching this past week's Dynamite, but let's kind of get into it. I watched the last match of the pre-show because my wife and I were making hot pot at home.
Ooh,
we got a hot pot. It's pretty cool. So we missed the Fred didn't watch any of the pre-show, but trios match. Nick Wayne, actually, Andrade and Leo Rush defeated Air Phlox and Top Flight. But I did catch the final match, which I like what they're doing. Now we have two instances where they've done big angles at the end of the pre-show, almost making it must watch. Like, you need to catch the end of these pre-shows. And that was the return of Anthony Bowens, defeating Platinum Max Caster in a squash. They're going to get behind Bowens here. And I like that. I think Bowens is, to me, he's always going to have a ceiling of maybe an upper mid carder. I don't think he's ever going to, like, I think you could build him up as a good TV world title challenger, but I don't think he's ever going to get higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I also think it's going to be, like, from a PR standpoint, a good thing, because Bowens is gay. But you wouldn't know it unless he tells you, because he's just a normal wrestler, and I think that kind of representation is a great thing. Because so often, like, you see wrestlers in other companies, like, it's their entire personality. No, it doesn't have to be your entire personality. There are other aspects to being a human than your sexuality. So I think this is, from a perspective of inclusion, I think this is fantastic. But just as a professional wrestling standpoint, Bowens has earned a push. He got super over. He's very solid in the ring. I don't think he's great, but he's completely inoffensive. He doesn't make mistakes, and his moves are physical and crisp. Like, you have a good mid-carder to upper mid-carder here, and I think it's time to give him a push. With Billy Gunn, I don't like that too much, but I'll let it play out.
Yeah, I mean, AEW is fond of the babyface manager, and I think that they've done a good job of, like, making them be used well. You know, it's not just like it's effective, I think, is what they're doing, you know, with the likes of Prince Nana.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are legs to that, and I think it's great, actually, in a sense, to be able to have babyface managers and have them you know, be part of the show. It makes sense, you know, from time to time. And I'm okay with Billy Gunn as a ringside guy, as a manager. Now, I hope we never see him wrestle again. Me too. I think he's done enough of that nonsense. It's not a good worker, especially these days. But, you know, if, you know, you have them do a tag match once in a while or something, that's okay. We can work with that. But, yeah, I mean, ringside for Bowens to help him get over, you know, because Gunn is over. He's not a fantastic talker by any stretch, but he's over. So, you know, they can work with that.
Yeah, I think this could be really interesting. We'll find out where it goes. Calling him the five-tool player, which obviously a baseball reference. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that goes. The show started off with a bang, though. Arguably the best match on the show. Will Ospreay defeats Kevin Knight in the opening round of the Owen Hart Foundation Men's Tournament. Fred, this rocked.
It was really fun.
I loved, like, Knight really got shine here. And this is a guy you could probably beat with like an Os Cutter, but he was resilient and it took a full hidden blade to beat him. I thought this was great. I thought it really showcased what Knight can do because this audience doesn't know outside pro wrestling like the audience of 4 or 5 years ago did. So
yeah,
great showcase of him. Yeah, I know it is very unfortunate. I really like this. I went 4.25 plus. I thought they had great chemistry. They were explosive. They were physical. They were high flying. They did a little bit of everything, and I thought it was great. The Os Cutter that Kevin Knight turned into a backslide was one of the coolest counters I've seen in a long time. It's hard to be creative nowadays, and that was one of the more creative spots I've seen.
Yeah, I thought that Knight acquitted himself very well here. There was a little roughness early on, if I recall correctly. But I think by the end of it, you know, Knight came off very well, I thought. You know, you had some good work from him. You had, I mean, for God's sake, you know, Will was not going to let him not have a good outing. And, I mean, Kevin Knight is tremendously athletic. So, you know, that if he gets, you know, if he gets a good opportunity with someone like Will Ospreay, then you're going to have a good match. And, you know, Ospreay did more than his fair share to make sure whatever I did listen to a little bit of the flagship review of the show. And, you know, I did hear Joe go off about how, you know, a little bit. Now, I don't want to make it sound like he was losing his mind or anything. But, you know, he did talk about how, you know, that Ospreay did not need to hit, like, every single big move he has. And I think that's a fair point. You know, he could have not gone through all of his finishers to finish this matchup. But if that's your biggest complaint, I mean, I think it was a good match. It was an enjoyable match. I went 4 stars on it. Very solid work. Kevin Knight had a nice, not really debut match, but, you know, big opportunity match and acquitted himself quite well. I'm excited to see what he does in AEW. I hope that he, you know, it smells like he's going to be positioned as a solid mid-carder, and that's okay, especially as like a starting point for him. I think that there's a possibility that he'll move higher up the card if he, you know, finds his charisma and ability to present himself like a star. But it's a good starting point for him, and it's nice to have some fresh blood in AEW.
And he's Ospreay adjacent, which I think is also really good for him. Ospreay needs to have friends in his promotion, and he's got one.
If they're ever like, oh, you feud him with someone, they need to do a tag match. Well, you got the built-in. You know, Kevin, you know, you can always call on Kevin Knight for that spot.
Mm-hmm. I will say,
real nice for that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I kind of mentioned in my portion of the review that, you know, maybe he could have just hit the Os Cutter and this would have been one of those guys. I've kind of just been thinking about it over the course of the last few minutes. I actually think it was smart this go around to establish him as, hey, I need to hit all these moves, because you just don't want him in his like first really big match in the promotion just get beat easily. You're establishing him as a real threat. You're establishing him as somebody to pay attention to and take serious. So I kind of like that they made a point to have the finish be, you have to take this guy serious. It's going to take more than just a secondary finisher to beat him. You're going to have to beat him.
Yeah, they tried to establish him as a, or at least as far as the finishers go, they definitely tried to establish him as like a, as a tougher out, you know, to use a baseball term there, than some other people. And I think it worked pretty well, honestly. So,
yeah. All right, next match. We Hurt People, the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin defeated the Learning Trees, Big Bill and Brian Keith. Man, the Hurt Syndicate rules so much. Has there ever been a cooler collective group of wrestlers in recent memory?
Not that I can particularly think of.
The charisma of, like, Bobby Lashley, so often he looks like a charismaless void where he's just like, I don't care. But that also fits really well with what this is, where it just works. And Shelton Benjamin looks rejuvenated. I would never know he's in his late 40s.
Like, no, he looks great.
And MVP doesn't have to work. He can just talk. That Kane is just such a cool little accent piece, because they look incredible. And this whole MJF thing is, I don't know where the direction is going. And we got a little less clarity about that when it comes to what happened at Dynamite. But I think these guys are just a lot of fun. I would love to see them just squash people every single week. Like, just put them on TV and squash.
Yeah. The thing with them is that they are not going to be a real high star rating kind of match with, and that's okay.
It's kind of like Goldberg. It's a big vibes thing.
Yeah,
power different moves, and
it's good to have like that kind of variety of on the show where it's not just, you know, you have something a little different and it stands out. And I think that the Hurt business stands out in AEW because of that, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this match was fine. Yeah, it wasn't bad by any stretch. I thought it was like 2 3/4, like, you know, just maybe a little short of good. You know, I'm generally okay with the Hurt business. I think they're positive contributors to AEW, and I'm happy to have them. So, would I like to see them have slightly better matches? Sure. But if you know, if this is the worst thing on your pay-per-view, you're doing all right. So I'm not that worried about it.
I think that's a great way to frame it. Except, was this the worst thing on the pay-per-view? We'll get to that later. AEW World Trios Championship match. Death Riders defeat Rated FTR. And this was less about the match and more about what happened post-match. In the match itself, I don't know. Perfunctory, fine. 3.25, 3.5, inoffensive, good work, good heat spots. They had a nice hot tag, but it's
worked pretty well.
Yeah. It was just kind of boring. It just kind of existed. I didn't feel anything. It was an emotionless void of a match.
It was professional. I went 3.75. And by the way, you missed a match, I'm very
Oh, I did. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
I scrolled too far down. We'll get back to the match before that in a minute.
Yeah.
Which I have a lot
but to say about that. I thought this was a perfectly solid tag match. 3.5. It was nicely worked. I believe that I said early on that one of my biggest concerns with the Death Riders is that it would just kind of demote Claudio and Pac and Yuta, but mainly the first two. I mean, I think Pac's a good worker, but, you know, not quite on the level of the other two. But it would demote them to just goon status. And my point being that, you know, if you've got these guys, it'd be nice to have them have great matches, you know, on a regular basis. And that they would get slotted into spots where that's not really their job, for better or worse. And unfortunately, turned out to be right on that. Pac and Claudio, I think, at least recently in the past few months, the start of this year, have been very much just outright goon / lackey mode. And that's kind of a bummer because those two, And again, I'm giving short shrift a little bit here to Uni, who I think is a good worker. I know some people are hard on him, but I think he's good. But to just have, you know, these guys just be like in the occasional tag match that's really not given enough time to be great or anything, or the focus to be great, it's a damn shame. And now one of them's hurt. And we kind of hate it. Kind of hate that aspect of it.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's more the character than anything, but
sure. Sure. I get that too. I mean, I get why they are in this spot, and I get why it has been in a way effective. You know, it's kind of just me being like, man, Pac rules. I'd love to have Pac in singles matches, and Claudio rules, and I'd love to have him in singles matches, you know. Well,
unfortunately, they had to cut the match short on Dynamite, which is him and Swerve Strickland, which had a chance to be pretty good. Because he hurt his ankle on a buckle bomb. Hopefully, it's just a high ankle sprain. He really couldn't put any weight on it.
I just watched that this morning, and it was not great. You know, he got back in the ring to finish the match, but I mean, he hobbled in there into the thrust kick from Swerve, and not great, Bob. Not great. I know that this has reignited the should we ban the buckle bomb discussion. I guess Brian Alvarez had a big discussion / meltdown, depending on how charitable you want to be about Brian Alvarez, I guess. But I think there is a point to it. Like, if guys are just getting hurt regularly with that move, and I think the issue was that Swerve kind of rushed that. It felt like it was executed too fast. I am not a working expert, so apologies if I am completely misreading that. But, you know, that sucks, man. It sucks to have a guy get hurt, and you can replace the buckle bomb. You know, it's not that hard.
I don't really have an issue with the buckle bomb per se, but when you have Sting almost have his career ended because of the buckle bomb, and then now this happens, I think it's an overreaction, so you need to ban it. But I do think if you're going to do it, we need to figure out a way to be safer with it.
Like, yeah.
Seth Rollins should probably not be doing the buckle bomb at his size. That should be for bigger guys. So it's easier for aiming points. It's easier to hit it consistently, because bigger guys are just naturally stronger, kind of thing. But
yeah,
whatever. People get hurt on stupid stuff all the time. People get hurt on
clothes. Oh, yeah, they do. I mean, people get hurt going into the ring. You know, I mean,
Vince McMahon.
Yeah, Kevin Nash also. I mean, you just get hurt sometimes. I got hurt, you know, I'm not an athlete by any stretch, but I got hurt because I could not walk over the curb in Philadelphia properly. You know, it you never know. You got baseball players missing time because they slip in the shower, or they cut themselves, or, you know, making dinner or whatever. There's like a couple every year. But you do want to make sure that you're not just doing a move just to do it and have it be a problem. And I think that is, I think it's a genuine concern, you know. I think it's something that you should be smart about. And, you know, if you sit down and think about it, and I'm not the guy to draw the conclusion on this. I'm not knowledgeable enough. But you know, if you get your top guys together, you know, your top men, and you have them sit down and have a conversation, be like, is this move safe enough where it's worthwhile doing? Or is it a problem? And have them, you know, you know, I kind of think that there could be some kind of discussion on it, or just have it done less often and have it done more carefully, because I do think that part of the issue was that it was rushed. And
understandable.
Yeah, if that's the case, then yeah, you're going to have issues with it. I don't think that's a surprise.
All right.
Anyways, the sixth man, solid, but like you said, the post-match was really what mattered here, and I thought this was a damn good turn.
Oh, it was a great turn. I want to pick your brain on this, because I'm torn. Sure. Dax makes the turn, and then Cash
Natalie Imbruglia. No one needed that joke, but I'm going to make it.
I'm already torn. I used to love that song as a kid.
It's a good song, man. It's
a very good song. But it's how Cash reacts to it, and he is like fighting back, and then all of a sudden they just hit the damn shatter machine.
Yeah.
That
I thought it was a little extra before that. Like,
it takes me out of it, man.
You didn't need all that, you know. Like, if that's the worst, again, it's one of those, like, if that's the worst thing you can say, I don't know, it's really a major issue. But at the same time, it was a little unnecessary. Like, yeah. Let's call it what it was. It was a little extra. You know, I don't know that they really needed to be like, oh, no, I can't believe you've done this. Why would you turn on a friend that, oh, wait, I am now helping you beat him up. Like, that was just kind of like unnecessary, but I think that that's kind of not a defense, but it's kind of par for the course in modern wrestling. Like, you can't just have a turn, you gotta have a little extra tacked on, you know, a little pizzazz to try to make it feel special or something.
Yeah, screw that.
Yeah,
I did like how violent they got, and I think it was
they just killed him.
If you even put the neck brace on.
Oh, the goofing on the stretcher in particular,
so good.
Was a highlight. That was very good stuff. Yeah, I thought this is a great angle. I really do. Hopefully, that will add some juice to FTR, because look, I think they're a great tag team, but you know, I think we're also not being truthful for saying that they've been the most interesting tag team recently. Like, I actually think in ring they had a good 2024. I just think it was really easy to kind of forget that because they were just kind of like there, you know, not really doing anything interesting at all. And you know, it's good to have your great tag teams be interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So hopefully that will be the direction for them, is to do stuff that matters.
I loved Rich's point on the instant reaction, voicewrestling.com/Patreon, patreon.com/voiceofwrestling, as I plug our friends. FTR goes through these spurts where they're just boring and uninteresting and nobody cares. And then all of a sudden they rule. And this is the rule period. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I agree with that. I did not hear that. I didn't get that far in the show. But yeah, man, that is the FTR experience.
And you know what? When they peak, they peak. And it's real good. So this is obviously leading to Edge and Christian getting back together. So if that ends up happening, do I care? No. Will it be kind of cool in the mid-card because they can both still work? Yeah. Christian, like modern-day Christian, is one of my favorite wrestlers. He is just so good and so snarmy and brilliant, and he's got such a great mind for the business, and you can just tell everything he does, even if it's like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this like Money in the Bank gimmick, which they shouldn't have done.
No,
but the fact that they only did it twice and it was both times with Christian, I think just fits, because Christian, ex-WWE guy, as long as you never do it again, okay, whatever. I think it works. Everything they've done with Christian's just been awesome. It could be really fun.
Yeah.
Like second, third match on the show. Yeah. And you know what? Maybe they get a perfunctory tag team title run. Okay. Would I have them beat the Hurt Business? No. I'd try and put someone else over and then have Cope and Christian beat them.
But, yeah. I think that would work better, I think.
All right, let's get to the match that came before this, because I forgot how to read. TBS champion Mercedes Moné beats Julia Hart. And I got to say, I was so impressed with Julia Hart in this match. She worked so hard, and she is getting significantly better. She's 23. She is stupid young. We're not talking about somebody who's like almost 30. 23. Yeah. And she's got the charisma. She's got the crowd connection, and the work is improving. It's not great. It's still a little sloppy at points, but you can tell she is working really hard and growing each match. And I thought her effort here was among the best on the show. And Mercedes' effort was bad. I didn't think she really put in a ton of effort here at all. And Julia Hart just outshined her.
You think so?
I do.
I did not think. I think I come down on thinking that the first half of the match was sloppy and not particularly good. And it was one of those, like, the Mercedes matches you get sometimes that are just kind of there, you know. I don't know if I attribute that to, like, not caring or if it's just kind of an off night. But I think once they got to the ground in the last few minutes of the match, I think it got really good.
Yeah, it did.
And I like that part. I have a positive review on this. I have it like 3.5 actually. So a good match. Not a great one by any stretch. Not one that I'll like be walking around remembering, you know, in a few months. But it was a nice match. I think Julia still needs to improve some in the ring. I think the biggest weak point with her. But like you said, she is very young, and hopefully she will develop that at some point.
I think she will. I gave Julia Hart 4 stars. I gave Mercedes Moné 2.75.
Okay.
I was just,
that's pretty fair.
So like as a overall match, 3.5, 3.75, like I was so impressed with Julia Hart here that just keep getting her in big spots. And I hope she works a ton of ROH. I hope she just, like, she's the type of person I would just have work ROH every week. And if she's not on AEW TV, and just work a match, just work.
I think she would really benefit from having a run as like the ROH world champ.
I agree, but that's going to be Billy Starks.
Away from, I mean, Starks would also benefit from that. So, hey, you know, that'll work too.
She was TBS champion for a long time, but she was more green then than she was now, which she grew a lot.
Yeah, she did. I think she also got hurt a lot during that time period. Like minor stuff, nothing major. I do remember her being out, like, you know, for short periods, nothing major.
Stuff like minor sprains and that kind of stuff. I don't know what her injuries were, but it felt like it's been long enough,
I forget now.
You wouldn't see her in the ring for like 6 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
But
it's not like she had to have surgery.
I'm buying a lot of stock in Julia Hart. I don't know if she is multi-time world champion kind of material, because even though they're almost equal, like I consider the TBS more of the mid-card belt, even though Mercedes is holding it, which I know feels kind of weird, but they put less time and effort booking the TBS than they do the TNT. The world title. So we'll kind of see how things go with Julia, but I very, very impressed. Impressed.
Do you have enough time to do a little game here regarding Julia Hart?
Okay. Let's do a game.
Okay, cool. So the game is, who do you think will be in a better position within women's wrestling? It doesn't necessarily have to be an AEW. They could jump to WWE or whatever. We're going to play Julia Hart versus the AEW roster. I'll just pick out some names.
In what time frame?
5 years. In 2030, assuming that, you know, we don't all get swallowed by a sinkhole. Who do you think is going to have a better career by 2030? Do you think it's going to be Julia Hart or Anna Jay?
Julia Hart. I like Anna Jay, but I haven't seen enough real linear growth like I have with Julia to believe that that's going to happen. She is still very young, but I would have liked to have seen it more to believe in her more than Julia Hart.
Okay. Julia Hart or Billy Starks?
Julia Hart. Billy Starks still has a lot of potential, but has she ever really turned the corner yet? Because it hasn't happened, I'm still skeptical. So, Julia.
Okay. Hart, Julia Hart, or let's do Chris Statlander.
Julia Hart. I just think Statlander's knee injuries just cratered the where her momentum was in the push, and I just think she's kind of stalled out.
Okay,
all right. So I worry about her long term. I worry about her long term, dude. She's already had two ACL reconstructions. Like, that's hard.
Yeah, but I think that's very different in the 2020s versus like the 1990s, and that is
I agree.
To keep in mind,
but she's also bigger.
Yep,
that's and with women in ACLs, I remember reading a study. Women are more likely to prone their ACL or tear their ACLs because of how they land. They land more flat-footed, where men land more on the balls of their feet. So the shock absorption is completely different with the knee. So two ACL injuries like that with how much power and stuff Statlander has really concerns me more than, oddly enough, if she were a male. Because and you know what? Maybe things have changed because I remember reading that in high school. But it's always stuck with me that women land more flat-footed, and that causes a lot more pressure and tension on the knee ligaments itself.
I do think women are more prone towards ACL tears still. I don't know, like, the flat-footedness as to other causes. You know, I can't speak on that. But I do think it's more common for a woman to tear her ACL than a male athlete. I think that I think it's less of an issue these days, though, just because of you know,
the repairs are so quick. 9 month timeline, you're ready to go.
Yeah, it's less of a disaster if you tear your ACL. It's not good, let's be clear, but it's not the end of the world. Okay, back to the game real quick. We'll do a couple more. Julia Hart or Mariah May.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go Mariah.
Okay, that's fair.
She's already farther along as a wrestler and as a performer, like character-wise, she's grown a lot. I still think that she's relatively raw and green, but she's peaked higher, so I'm going to lean Mariah.
Okay. Let's do Megan Bain. Really hard or Megan Bain?
If Tony keeps booking Megan Bain.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get to her in a minute. I wanted to see her because I've only seen a couple of GCW matches, which her against Adiskus Kogar, how are you supposed to really be able to project that forward?
Yeah, it's a little different.
But her look is so incredible. And she moves well. You can tell that she's like Jade Cargill is a natural athlete, but she was clunky. Megan Bain is a lot more fluid and a lot more able to do some of those linear things where Jade really wasn't. So I'm so high on what she can be, but as it is with any bigger wrestler, how you book them can be really challenging. And I thought they booked her very well in that title match, and we'll get to that in a minute.
All right. And the other two, I'll drop you. You know what? We'll do three. And then I'll stop. Julia Hart versus Sky Blue.
Julia Hart.
Yeah, I think that's an easy one there. I agree with you. Julia Hart versus Thunder Rosa.
Thunder Rosa's far and away better now, but that back to me it feels like a ticking time bomb.
Let me replace Thunder Rose. She got started late though, so like that is so you know it's not as bad in terms of like her long term prognosis as a professional wrestler, but the back is concerning. I will replace Thunder Rosa with Queen Aminata.
The her presence
over Julia Hart.
Yeah, her Aminata's presence is incredible. That is the future megastar.
Yeah, I think she could be a star for sure. It's just a matter of like getting that opportunity. I'd like to see her be featured a little bit more, you know. The last one, Willow Nightingale.
Willow. With a bullet. Willow is... I mean, everybody who listens to the show knows how we feel about Willow Nightingale.
Yeah. Willow's I don't want to take this completely off the rails, but I am getting a little concerned about the usage of Willow recently, like this year.
Yeah.
Like, being positioned where she was with Swerve Strickland for that short period was nice, don't get me wrong, but moving beyond that, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know. I worry that maybe they don't see her as a major star, which is insane to me, but...
I view it the other way. Mm-hmm. They don't have anything good enough for her, so they're keeping her off TV.
So you think she's in that vortex of, like, she's a star, but we don't want her to job kind of thing?
Yes. I think they to go with the Mariah May, Toni Storm story. They're building up this Owen Hart tournament, and you have, like, Athena and Mercedes, which I think Mercedes wins the belt from Athena at Supercard of Honor. She's doing a belt collector gimmick right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I just said Billy Starks probably beats Athena for the title, it's probably Billy Starks beats Mercedes for the title. I don't think that there's enough for her right now. So don't overexpose her. Keep her off TV for a little bit.
Okay. I don't know that I fully agree with that theory from Tony Khan's standpoint, but
I don't know if I do either, but
yeah, that's a completely different discussion for us to have on a show where we aren't like trying to get through the rest of this pay-per-view that I already feel bad for dragging down a little bit. But yeah, let's get back to Megan Bain, Toni Storm, man. I think Toni Storm had a hell of a night.
This was great. Toni was great. To me, I gave this my match of the night. I loved this.
Yeah.
Toni bumped her ass off. Megan Bain looked like a million bucks. Like, physically, she's just so impressive. It's like she's a Greek goddess chiseled out of stone. Just a physically impressive-looking athlete. And then you see her get in the ring and she can move. She's got power and she's got this physical aura. And Toni just played completely into that with the whole Rocky III thing, because obviously Rocky going up against Clubber Lang in the rematch, that was the whole motif of it.
Yeah.
It was, I gave this 4.5. I loved it.
I liked this. I thought it was a 3.5 match. I thought Toni came out looking like a damn star. I mean, like, I think, I think this may have, I don't know if this is just an offhand comment from Dave Meltzer, I didn't listen to it, but do you think Toni Storm is the biggest star AEW has right now? Or at least biggest babyface star?
No, I think that's still Kenny Omega. But yeah. It's a discussion. And
I think I'd go Omega, Swerve, Toni.
I think that's fair. Hangman. But I think, is he?
Yeah, I think I might put him a little below Storm right now. And if you wanted to put Storm above the other two, I don't think I'd fight it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm not 100% sure on what order I would put them on, but she's one of their top four stars minimum, right? Mm-hmm. Like top five, maybe. Maybe there's someone I'm forgetting. Like, yeah. I think she's a bigger star than Moxley. I know that they have Mox as the champ, but I think does more business wise than Mox.
Based on what we saw, I think what was last week in the Observer, I don't think she does.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier that the Mox stuff did move numbers.
Yeah. So I need to correct myself. I only went 4 on this match. 4.5 is. I misread my own writing because I'm an idiot.
You are off to, you're on a hot one, buddy.
Dog, I had a 9 a.m. meeting and I went to bed at 2. That does not jive with me, brother. But it's fine. I still really liked it. I thought.
Oh, it was a good match.
The finish to me was flawless.
4.5 was.
Yeah.
Megan 4.5 would have been like a little like, whoa, okay.
Bane's going for what, like that, it's like an F5 gimmick.
Yeah.
And Toni Storm gets a small package showing like, hey, Bane's really good and it took smarts to beat her. I thought it was a really big package, sir. The big package.
Boy, she is insane on commentary.
I like the one that. From Nantucket.
She is a force to be reckoned with on commentary. I'm amused by it, typically.
Yeah.
anyways, what was next? Fletcher Briscoe. This
I went very 4.5 plus.
I went 4.25 on it. Very good match. Fletcher is that I heard the flagship have a little discussion on this. They're debating if he is one of the top, like where he fits into the top wrestlers in the world right now. And they suggested that he is a potentially a top three wrestler right now.
Based on current performance only. Yeah, I think that's a plausible take.
Now, this is keep in mind that Joe is definitely not a Joshi guy, and Rich is not like super plugged into that scene, right? Osprey's better, and Takeshita is better. I feel like that's pretty fair, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know who should be number one?
Who?
Our IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, Roki Goto.
I thought about Goto. I think they're close to each other.
I'm memeing. He shouldn't be one, but I love this Goto run.
Goto's having a good year, man. I'm not going to. I mean, he is like the most watchable thing in New Japan right now. You know, he's
not a gimmick. He's just real. Like you're gonna get good worker from Goto.
Yeah, I mean. I am pro Goto. I have no problem with Goto. He's a top 10 guy for me this year right now, more or less. Do you think Zack Sabre Jr. is better than Kyle Fletcher?
I'm going to be honest. It's hard for me with Zack Sabre Jr. because I think his matches oftentimes bore me.
Oh, no.
But he's minority opinion. He's objectively great. Well, Toots... against some opponents.
How dare you? You have an opinion that other people don't agree with. This is when the death threats start.
That's fine. I had somebody look back at, I did a draft party with one of the local companies I work for, and I sat on the couch and I displaced the couch cushions at 6'6", 330 pounds. Oh my gosh, I displaced the couch cushion. Just incredible stuff. But
a monster. Yeah,
I think Zack Sabre Jr. is an objectively great wrestler. Sometimes his matches get a little monotonous and boring, and they aren't as engaging for me personally. That doesn't mean I don't think he's great, but it does limit the potential ceiling, because if I'm not that engaged with it, there's only so much objectivity I can put into that, because subjectivity is going to matter a lot.
You heard it here, folks. Tyler Fornes hates Zack Sabre Jr.
No, well, he should maybe think about eating meat.
Fiber of his body.
I think I'd put Fletcher ahead of Zack Sabre Jr. Fletcher's style is more appealing to me, but so that's a caveat.
You can contact Tyler Fornes by calling him at 763.
Wrong area code. Good try, though.
I looked it up. All right. Just joking. Okay, let's get back to this match. I don't want to do another, like, who do you like better thing, but Fletcher is so damn good. Like, he's at worst, I think, one of the 10 best wrestlers in the world. Like, he's just really freaking good. And Briscoe, and I think Mark Briscoe is getting close to having, like, an annual most under-pushed argument in professional wrestling, because he is so talented and also really over, and he's just put in that like happy-go-lucky mid-card babyface position.
He's just so authentic.
Yeah, and I just wish that he was used a little heavier, you know, that he was used as more of a dude that matters kind of situation.
Yeah, I agree.
I genuinely thought that after the death of Jay, that he could have been like a real top main eventer. And maybe they decided not to do that because of, you know, the death of Jay. But I think he's got legs beyond just like the, we're sorry your family member died, you know, variety. And I'd love to see it, but I think this is more or less where he's going to be in his entire AEW run. And it's not like he'd be used better in WWE. So I don't know, man. Like, what do you think? Do you think he's underused or do you think he's like appropriately used?
I think this just kind of goes to AEW just has too many people that they could realistically give a humongous push to right now. And it's a good and a bad thing. I think you could put the rocket pack on Briscoe. I don't think anybody complain except maybe Hangman and Swerve fans. Personally, when I look at it, I would get behind Briscoe, but would I get behind him much more than I am right now? Probably not. For the time being, I think you can continue this run. You can continue building him up. I think you maybe have him beat Adam Cole for the TNT title, run with that for a little while, have a bunch of really cool last matches on television, and then maybe you elevate him, give him a world title shot in like a year. But
yeah, that's all right.
There's just a lot of guys that you should push heavy. Oh, no,
they have a huge roster. They have a huge roster, and they have a very talented roster.
I think you should stay on the TNT level for the moment. But I think you could flip the switch and give him a world title run. I think you would be justified. The whole first year after Jay's passing was about getting him the Ring of Honor world title.
Yeah.
And I think
it was a good storyline, unfortunately, on a secondary platform.
And it also ended up being justified based on the wrestler, which like Rey Mysterio won the world title in 06 because Eddie passed away. That felt forced. This, it felt like the trajectory, but he didn't win it at first. He had to like scratch and claw, and then he got it.
Yeah, because Mark Briscoe is awesome, and you know that was a good story with him.
Yeah, so much about it is just authenticity. He's just
this, but this was a great match.
It was four and a half
outing for Briscoe. Yeah, I think I went 4.25. Yeah, 4.25 on this one.
I did. I have one major critique. I hated that Briscoe used the cutthroat driver and it didn't finish the match. Like Fletcher rolled out of the ring, so he wasn't like pinned. But Fletcher shouldn't have been able to roll out of the ring because it's basically a burning hammer. I don't like that.
I'm okay with them escaping.
I'm more okay with them escaping than kicking out. But I don't think you should have been able to escape because it's basically a burning hammer. That's just me. Your mileage will vary. Speaking of your mileage may vary here, Fred, let's get to probably the worst match on the show. And I didn't even think it was that bad. The Ring of Honor World Championship versus Mask match. The Nueve Chris Jericho versus Bandido. They have a match. And then they do a dusty finish.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of debate about the dusty finish. I've got to be honest. I liked it. I don't want this to happen regularly. Let's be clear. But I think it worked here. I think with the storyline, and I think Jericho has been a great heel in this story. Ever since he like got a little more serious, I think he's been doing his best to carry himself, you know, within his abilities. Because look, he's limited in 2025.
He did have a really good lion salt in this match, though. I'll give him that.
Yeah, this was not a bad outing for him. But he is limited in what he can do. And that's just part of the reality of what he is in 2025. But, I mean, he is still, at worst, well, okay, at worst, he's kind of bad. But on this night, he was solid. You know, it was not by any stretch a disaster. I think this was an okay match. I went 3 stars on it. I was all right with the shenanigans. I think it worked. I get the people that are like, well, the main event had all the run-ins. Why didn't they restart that? Yeah, that's a fair point. But also, like, I don't know. I'm not going to complain about a little gimmicky babyface win for Bandido here. You know? Like, that's it's fine. It's all right.
Yeah. I will say the context with the dusty finish, I think is fair because apparently in Lucha, they do this kind of stuff all the time with mass matches. So I don't have an inherent issue with it, but I don't know. With this audience, do you want to do that?
Yeah, they could suck it up. It worked in the building, I think.
Oh, it did. A lot
it was
of
over
like,
big, I thought, in the building.
Like, wait, are they really going to take Bandito's mask? And they got me. They got a lot
yeah,
of
I think they got a lot of the crowd. I think it worked well. I mean, you can complain about it in hindsight, sure, but I think it was, I think it worked all right. I think it was successful with the crowd. And that's what you're looking for in this kind of, you know, situation. So I can't really fathom, you know, complaining about that. Because it worked. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I don't like everything in wrestling that works, but it worked. And I think you have to at least admit that.
Mm-hmm. All right. I gave that one 3.25. That actually wasn't the worst match, because this one was.
Daniel Garcia. I thought the main was the worst.
What?
I thought the main was the worst match.
Oh, no, this one was way worse. Daniel Garcia losing the TNT Championship to Adam Cole. I hated this.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. Don't get me wrong. I thought
the work wasn't bad. I just hated it.
Yeah, it was cold. It was definitely cold. I think that Adam Cole has been way underwhelming since he returned from injury, I think. I think that's a fair critique. And I think that one thing I'm worried about is that since the start of the year, Daniel Garcia has also been a little underwhelming on the in the ring. And these two combined have not been a good combination. And that stinks. I remain high on Daniel Garcia. You know, we'll see what he does away from this storyline. If you know, once he gets to not wrestling Adam Cole seemingly every collision. But I think these two just do not work well together, and that's kind of where I am right now. It doesn't do much for, I know that there's some like Daniel Garcia haters. This was not a good night to disprove them.
No.
But I like him. I think he's a good worker. I like watching Daniel Garcia typically. I am worried about Adam Cole. I think he's recovered slightly since like the work, you know, when he first came back and they forgot. I mean, I know why, but still deciding to resume the MJF storyline was insane to me. I would have pretended that never happened. I just would not have acknowledged it if I could have got away with that.
I get that.
And I don't know, man. I think this was a real bummer of a match. But it was technically sound. It was just cold, so I gave it 3 stars. Maybe I should have been harsher on it, but that's where
I went 2. Adam Cole sucks. I'm sorry. But that's enough of that. Let's get to actual good wrestling. The 3-way for the AEW International title.
This Kenny was the match of the night, I thought.
Kenny Omega versus Ricochet versus Speedball Mike Bailey. It probably had about 8 different parts, places where it could end, but I kind of liked how it felt like an epic where they really utilized the third person well in the like how the match kept going, even though it probably shouldn't have. It was a long match, but you never felt like you were bored. There was always stuff going on. They kept you engaged. They probably could have, you know, slowed the match down. Ended it earlier. But this is great. Ricochet and commentary, talking
nice
shit
spot.
And Speedball just kicking him. Oh, phenomenal. The finish was awesome. I really like that with one winged angel off the second turnbuckle, and then Speedball is drops down like he's in the Tree of Woe, and he's got Ricochet's leg and can't do anything about it. I thought that
was a good finish.
Tremendous. This was just a very well worked match. Speedball was great. Ricochet was great. Omega was great. Four and a half. I'm right in there.
Five on this.
Wow.
Yeah, I like this. It was all action. These guys worked hard. I thought that the work was magnificent, and it's I thought it was a great match. You know, I thought Bayley acquitted himself very well. It's not that I question Bayley's abilities, but I question how he would fit into the company. He has been nicely used as a solid mid-card babyface. I like where he is right now. So that's been a plus for him for sure. I mean, like, Kenny Omega looked great. I thought everyone looked great in this match, and I thought it was a very exciting match. And by the end, I thought it was just great, frankly.
It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This is a great way to continue that introduction of Speedball into AEW. Ricochet. That man was...
He could be a world champ, I think.
I do too. John Moxley said on Dynamite this week, this is the most talented roster in the world. This might be the most talented roster ever. Other than like...
Yeah, there's an argument.
90s All Japan, peak New Japan in the golden era with Okada. This is incredible.
This roster has got like, you know, friggin' Black Taurus is a mid-carder, you know?
Like, I wouldn't even call him a mid-carder. He doesn't win.
Yeah, I mean, like, not enough for mid-carder, I'll say that much. You know? Like, I think it's a great roster. I just think it's filled with a bunch of talent and embarrassment of riches kind of situation, frankly.
Yeah.
But I really like, I love this match. I mean, I'm a sucker for all action matches, which is what this was 100%. The lots of like new novel spots that I think were very impressive. And I just love this match. I just thought it was great.
Yeah, it was. And final match of the night, John Moxley.
That's a great. That's defeats a great.
Swerve Strickland to retain the title. I'm going to be honest. I was really into this match. But you always had that little floating thing in the back of your head. Well, we know Hangman's coming. And he did. Yeah. So let's start there. Because I thought up until that point, it was like a 4-star match. It was good. Hangman comes. He's debating, is he going to want to hit Swerve? Is he going to want to hit Mox? And then Pac comes down. And they do their thing.
Yeah.
I think Hangman ended up hitting Mox, if I recall correctly.
He did. He did. Because that was directly after, like, all the Death Riders jumped him, and mm-hmm. he had the ops come out. I'm not feeling this, like, ops being put in the position of, like, probably the centerpiece of a Blood and Guts or something. Like, it just feels too forced. You know, I'm hoping that that's not what we're moving towards. They set up the Trios title match, which, if that's going to be the case, fine, you know, but
yeah,
I don't want to see them be like, oh, what we've got to do now is have a 5-man anarchy in the arena with the Death Riders and the Ops. Like, that doesn't have any juice, man.
No, it doesn't. But then the lights go out and it's Sabu. No, it wasn't Sabu. It was the Young Bucks who each have an arm of Swerve, and they hit him with the EVP trigger. Moxley gets the win, and we're just like, what? And it became evidently clear the direction is going to be the Bucks versus Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland. And then on Dynamite, they included Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. So we might get Kenny, Hangman, and Swerve versus the Elite at Double or Nothing in a 6-man trios match. Who takes the fall there? Probably Matt Jackson. That would be my best guess. But one, that'll rule. Two, I kind of like the direction that they're going with this Hangman and Swerve thing, because it's almost like, hey, I hate your guts, but it's also an understanding of why the other side feels the way they do. I kind of liked that, where Swerve, like, Hangman's like, I had to burn your house down. Swerve's like, or you deserved it. And he's like, I know I did. I thought that was cool, where like they still hate each other, but then there's almost like a mutual understanding of things. Mm-hmm. And like, you can kind of get a short little run here and then have them blow up again and then just continue this blood feud, which has been absolutely phenomenal. I don't know if I would do it, but the fact that they are doing it, I feel like it's okay. I feel like it's good with that context built in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really don't know how to feel about the Swerve thing, Swerve and Pinkman storyline. I don't hate it. I know that much. I don't know that I love it, but I think that it was a smart way to distract from the fact that they weren't going to have Swerve win the title, is to be, you know, immediately put him into a different storyline. Like, I think that's good booking. I don't know that it's going to... I just don't know. I'm kind of really in the middle of this one, and I guess we will see how it goes. Because I feel like it may be a touch too cute, you know, a little too like the whole enemies to lovers thing, from fiction that is popular now with the lit TikTok, etc. It's hitting it pretty hard, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Like, it's a little unsubtle, but I don't know. Wrestling's not a particularly subtle thing, so I guess we'll see. I'm not out on it. I don't know that it's going to be a success, but it is two great performers, so I'm not really concerned with it. Like, I think it'll be fine, whatever, you know, route they take with it.
Yeah. Only time will tell.
Yep.
But that's the show, Fred.
Yeah, it is the show. It was all right. It was a decent enough pay-per-view. I don't think it'll be like a... It's not a show that you're considered by any stretch.
No. But I didn't waste my time. Didn't waste my money. Good wrestling show.
6, maybe a 7 out of 10.
And that's exactly where Cage Match has it. So, like, that's perfect. Like,
yeah.
It's a good way to spend a Sunday night in April.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you give us 5 stars on iTunes. And make sure you subscribe. We greatly appreciate all of you. I'm Tyler. It's Fred. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.